Oh, yes, indeed, we are back. My name is Joe.
And I'm Carolyn.
You guys are listening to the Carolyn Joe Show! That's right, my name is Joe Carabay. I'm a filmmaker, photographer, writer, definitely in the band Monday Mistress, but today I am a podcaster. And across from me, one of the greatest minds I've ever met in my whole entire life. Her name is Carolyn Bolevsky. How you doing, Carolyn?
I'm doing great.
And guess what, Carolyn? Today is episode 400!
What?
That's right. We always try to do something a little special for you guys. So if you notice, we tried to hold back a little bit from the episodes this year because 400 is a big deal. 400.
It's 400.
100, 200, 300, 400. How many times can you say you've actually reached up to a number 400 of doing anything? Anything. So we were like, you know what? Let's take a little break and let's just start it again on 400. So what do we do special this time, Carolyn?
Well, as always, we do a podcast at AwesomeCon, and this year was no exception. This year, AwesomeCon celebrated 5 massive years of that show,
and we've 5!
And we've been a part of it ever since the beginning, and that show has grown tremendously. We basically, like, that whole show is taking over the full DC Convention Center in Washington, D.C., our nation's capital. And we were very grateful to have a special guest, Karen Hallian, on our show. And she's an amazing artist. Guys, check out her work because it just, like, warms my heart to see her work. It's excellent.
And also, a massive thank you just for AwesomeCon. They've always put us here. They've always given us a spot at AwesomeCon to do a podcast in front of an awesome audience, in front of whoever, you know what I mean? Just to get us out there and giving us a guest. We are extremely, excruciatingly, awesomely thankful for everything they've given us to give this spot. So we're like, let's just do it at AwesomeCon. 5-year anniversary for AwesomeCon, 400 episode anniversary for us, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so many good landmark events happening at this time, and so please, please have a fun time listening to the show. And we're going to have also some other AwesomeCon panels and audio coming up in the future weeks. But this is kicking off our Summer of AwesomeCon shows. And enjoy listening to it. And we'll be back with some special announcements at the end of the show.
That's right. Stay tuned. Have a ball. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we're here live at AwesomeCon. Once again, for the 400th episode of the Carolyn and Joe Show, let's all clap. Such an awesome moment. We've been here every single year since AwesomeCon has started. Since there was a tiny seed.
It's a 5-year anniversary today.
It
this
is?
Weekend.
Oh yeah, that's right. And our 400th show, so it's all just coming together. But Carolyn, we have a special guest.
Yes.
As we always do. Always one of the best entertaining guests ever.
Yes.
Who do we have?
We have Karen. Can you pronounce
Hallian?
Okay, I just asked her what her last name was, and then it totally escaped. Karen Hallian. She is an amazing artist. She's worked with licensed brands like Marvel and Disney, and so many great characters that you've got to illustrate. We're going to be interviewing her today live at AwesomeCon, so I'm really excited. I just know, like, off the bat, because I'm an artist as well, and just the opportunity to be able to work with all those great brands like LucasArts and so many great characters. And it's amazing because you're, like, an officially licensed artist. And so many times in Artist Alley, like, you see sometimes people taking those characters. Like, you know, it's almost like everyone loves those characters and adores those characters and wants to draw them. But you're, like, officially licensed.
Yeah.
So you're legit.
I think it's definitely a mixture these days in Artist Alley of some people who have done licensed stuff, but then also do the parody and the other stuff, too. Mm-hmm. And then there's just the full out license stuff too. And, it's really fun. I've worked on some projects I'm not allowed to talk about because of confidentiality agreements and things like that with, Disney Imagineering. And then getting to be in Star Wars Celebration twice, which was all licensed with Acme Archives and that kind of thing too. But yeah, it's fun.
So when you were growing up, were you all like, was that what you did? You always were drawing characters ago?
No. No.
How'd that start?
No, I was very academic. I was in I thought I was going to go into math, or for a little while I thought about politics.
Wait, what does that mean, go into math?
Go into, I was very math, I love math, I love algebra, ooh. I love doing, I thought I would do some sort of like engineering or something like that. I was in...
I always did wonder, what is the math job?
I don't know, yeah, I think, I'm assuming engineering, but I was in like kind of AP classes all through high school and things like that, and it wasn't until I was about 16 or 17 that I thought about an art career.
Hmm.
And my parents were not thrilled.
So did you take like art classes, like in
just your regular elementary school, high school art classes? That's it. Nothing outside of that.
So would you say it was like frowned upon? Like people were like, I don't know if you're gonna make it.
Well, back then, I mean, I'm gonna date myself, but I went to high school. I graduated high school in '91, so it was like late '80s, mm-hmm. early '90s. And art, you were either a very famous artist, which nobody was, like, you know, super famous, or you were a starving artist. There was no in between. So. Yeah. When I was 16, 17, junior, senior year of high school, and I said to my parents, I think I want to go to art school, they were not thrilled because they were like, you're not going to make any money, you're not going to be able to pay your bills, what do you think, what are you doing? You've been going towards something else, and yeah, it was definitely frowned upon.
So they legit, sound like legit a said that, like, they're not going to make, no one makes money off
no
of
no one makes money off of art. No, well, back then.
Until you're dead.
Well, the thing is, I went to the University of Vermont, and I took a bunch of liberal arts classes. I took, you know, anthropology, political science, all sorts of stuff, but I also started taking real art classes. And after the first year, I was like, yeah, this is what I want to do. And so I didn't have a portfolio. I had to take another year at UVM, put together a portfolio, wrote to Disney Animation, because that's kind of where I wanted to work at the time. They weren't doing as much computer stuff. And I said, okay, what schools are good? And Ringling School of Art and Design in Sarasota was one of the ones they recommended. I applied, I got in, I went there, I graduated, tried to freelance, and failed miserably for like 3 years. So yeah, it took me a long time to get to where I am now. And then I became an art school teacher, elementary school art teacher for 6 years.
So like in high school and all that, I know, you know, like in high school, there's like, oh, there's the jock or there's like the popular kid. I always find there's the same thing like in the art classes.
Yeah.
Like, what were you, like a goth, or were you like, I'm the girl who has the multi, I mean, you have colored hair right now, you know what I'm saying? Like,
no, I actually just colored it now, like recently. At UVM has a very fine, I mean, back then, so the 90s, very fine arts. You know, it was, and so I wanted to work at Disney. My stuff looked very illustrative, very, and it was, I remember very distinctly being in a critique and everybody's work being up on the wall and mine just sticking out like a sore thumb. And people, like other students, were like, I don't really like this. I don't like find it very interesting, you know, very, and the art teacher being like, well, I think Karen does want to do this kind of thing. And they were all like, well, that's not real art.
So it was more animation looking?
Yeah, yeah. It was cartoony. Yeah. It was like what I do. It was, you know, basically what I do now.
Which is really strange because like I draw too. And Carolyn is an amazing cartoonist. But there's different styles, right? Because she is a cartoony. But I find it weird that I guess a lot of people don't like, I guess it's the norm to be like, that's not real art.
Why
do you think people think that?
I think it's better now. I think back then it was different.
Yeah.
Because, and then I went to Ringling, and I was in the illustration program, and everybody was drawing like that. Like, it was, I felt more at home there. Mm-hmm. But I was definitely small fish in a big pond there, because people had been drawing for years and years, and they were drawing when they were like 4, and I had just picked it up. So I was miles behind at that point.
I mean, especially at that time period, there wasn't as many opportunities to get into Disney. Because really, like, what do you have, Ringling and CalArts, and maybe a couple other choices.
Yeah,
and
New York Visual Arts was the other choice that they recruited from. And Ringling was really great, because even back then Disney came to the school and recruited. My friend Mike Greenholt, who works at Disney now, he was recruited his junior year. They sent him to Disney Art Camp his senior year, which they paid for. They paid for his senior year of Ringling, and then he got hired right out. So it was a good school to be at. Pixar.
Because they're looking.
Yeah, they were looking, and Ringling now has gotten even better and better and better.
Yeah.
But that was the place to be. I just was... My art was not, I almost failed out of art school. I was I had a very nice senior thesis teacher who was like, I really should fail you, but I'm gonna let this slide and give you a C.
What is failing? Like, what is that? Turning stuff in, or?
No, I turned stuff in, it just wasn't very good. It was really bad.
Here's the thing, like, I know, like, in sometimes in art schools, at least maybe the one I went to, they're always like, okay, whatever, pass. You know, they're like, so how did they, how hard was the critique?
It was bad. It was just not good work. It was not college level work. Like, I mean, it was, the skill level was not there. And I think I knew that. So I wasn't putting my heart into it. And at the time I was kind of thinking about, honestly, maybe not doing art because I just saw all of these incredible artists who were putting out this amazing work. And I just couldn't quite get my skill level
there. It's hard when you
there.
Have that, I guess, the curve of like when you start seeing other people's work and then you're like, especially with all the critiques that you do in art school, it's like you really start to think that everything has to be nitpicked, even if it looks okay. You think it looks okay, but really subtle things about like, oh, that hand gesture looks like it's not quite right. And like, normal people wouldn't even pick up on it.
Yeah.
But it's good that they do hit on, like, it is aggravating at first, but it's good that they do hit on those things later on, because it makes you a better artist, even though it's a struggle.
Yeah, it was definitely a struggle, and it was, like I said, I went home, and I was waitressing to pay the bills and trying to freelance, and at that point, there was no social media. You had to go to Kinko's and put together a portfolio and mail it out to, like, every 6 months, I sent a portfolio to Disney Animation. At that time, DreamWorks had just done Anastasia, so I got, I sent them a portfolio, and I got like a test back where I was supposed to animate her dancing and things like that. I didn't get the job, obviously. To children's book illustration companies, publishing companies, I have a big folder of rejections from that time period. Yeah, and I just struggled for a couple years, and I was sick of waitressing, so I became a special needs aide at a middle school. One of the art teachers was like, I'm retiring, you should think about taking the teacher's test and becoming the art teacher at this elementary school in Swampscott. And I did, and I thought that's where I was going to be. That was great. It was wonderful. Kids like keep you on your toes. They're like, Mrs. Hallion, draw this. And you can't go look for reference. You just have to do it. It was fun. I loved teaching, but I thought that's what I was going to do. And so I was still working on my own art, but when you are working full time, and then at the time I was waitressing to pay for graduate school to keep my job, and I had a kid, so drawing, I was still working all that time, still drawing, but it wasn't until 6-7 years ago that I finally found my style and finally felt comfortable with my artwork. It was a long time. So when people were like, oh, you're so talented, I'm like, it's like 20 years of like constant turmoil and stress and work and work and work.
But what was the hurdle like in your style? What was that moment where you're like, I think I have? Was it like the line work you were throwing in?
It was color. Honestly, I love to draw, which is why I wanted to be an animator. I love drawing figure. I love drawing movement and things like that. I love drawing a pencil. And then I would try watercolor, acrylics, oils, everything to get the color in there. And I just couldn't handle the materials. And then I started working digitally in Photoshop, and that was it right there. Mm-hmm. So it was like, for some reason, that clicked. And then I started doing artwork for T-Fury. And for t-shirts, you're only allowed to use 5 or 6 colors when they're screen printed. And that helped, because when I would look at a piece, I'm like, oh my God, I don't know how to color this. There's so many colors. So what do I use? What's the best palette? This limited me. And it almost, now when I do full color things, I don't know how to explain it really, but it helped me. You stick to a certain little palette and then you slowly expand, and it really helped me. So that helped with the color issue. And then I started getting into Copic markers, which they didn't really have. I don't know if they had those back then, which is an expensive art habit to have. Mm-hmm. Those really worked for me. So it was basically finding the medium that really just lent itself to my style. And every once in a while, I'll try to go back to painting, and I'm like, I can't do this.
Yeah, once you get addicted to digital, there's no turning back at certain moments.
Which I feel bad, because you don't have originals, and there are some people who really want originals, and I don't have any, unfortunately. I mean, other than the Copic marker sketches.
I guess you can print it like on watercolor.
You can
paper.
Do like a limit. Yeah, like you can do limited edition runs, which I've done before too. My boyfriend's an artist, and he is amazing, like in all cross materials. He does oil pastels, and then he'll throw colored pencils in there, and then he'll go back to oil painting, and then he'll go over here and do this. And I just, it's crazy how he's able to just handle all the kinds of materials. I can't do that.
I remember like a few years ago, I was in a panel and I filmed Paul Pope and I think James Jean. And they were talking about how, like, you know, technology is advancing so much with, like, people go into doing digital, but people can, like, paint with their hands or practical things. That's, like, literally going to become magic.
Yeah, it is magic. It's crazy to watch him work. It's beautiful how he's able to just comes alive and how he's able to master those materials. He does work digitally sometimes, but he doesn't like it as much, I don't think.
But sometimes it's like once you have like that groundedness of like what you wanted to create with like, you know, with paints or oils, and then you go into that, like you're now searching to emulate.
Yeah.
It's interesting because also it's like for you, it's like you, because the technology wasn't there when you first started. It's no. almost like you had to battle through time just to get to that
point. Get where I was. Yeah, that's interesting. I learned Photoshop and Illustrator in the end of my senior year at Ringling, and it was like fledgling. And Illustrator, I still don't know how to use. Like I can't.
I finally was able to use it after so many years, but it's just a matter of time where you like using
the tool. The pen tool.
I'm like, I just want to draw. I don't want to do this. I just want to draw it.
Illustrator, can I just
Yeah.
But you know what? Since you might like it, if you spend more time with it, the mathematical side of it.
Yeah.
Those points are always on target.
Well, when I do the Art Nouveau stuff and mm-hmm. it has to be perfect,
yes.
I think it would help. And I mean, when I'm using Photoshop, basically I have one tool that is like a colored pencil brush that I sketch with, and then I have one inker, and that's it. Like, I don't
even... So you're really only dealing with two brushes.
Basically, yeah. I have two brushes. I don't even... use any of the shortcuts. There's one shortcut I use. I think it's a Control T where I can resize things. Mm-hmm. That's it. I'm not using anything really set. I've learned how to use some gradients in the background. That's mm-hmm. like a new thing for me. But basically, I'm just using it like I would use markers or something like
and
that.
I'm assuming are you on a tablet or a Wacom or Intuos?
I'm on a very Cintiq. Old Cintiq. It's, I think, about 4 or 5 years old now. I should probably upgrade because this half of the screen doesn't work as well as it used to.
It has some lag.
Yeah, it's got a little bit of a lag on this side, and it's got fingerprints all over it from my kids. And at one point, I had this deadline for Her Universe, and my, at the time, 4-year-old broke my pen. And those
How's
are not
happen?
Easy.
They
you can't just,
it?
He, I was letting him draw. He likes to draw on it. I was letting him draw. And those are not things you can just run to Staples and get another one.
No.
So now I have the one that I work with and a backup in a drawer just in case. But that was a hard lesson to learn.
That's a good tip, though, to have a backup.
Yeah, really, because that's the thing is I was like, oh, my God, I can't get Amazon, can't deliver it for like a week and a half. It wasn't even on Prime.
Goodness.
It was like a huge issue.
Yeah.
And then everybody was trying to tell me, use this one. I'm like, none of those work. Like, I tried to go order just a tablet pen.
Nope. to be a special one. And even, I think, different generations of them won't let you use the pen.
Yeah, that was a scary thing, because it's not like you can run the art supply and grab some paint.
Nope.
I forgot, too, we were talking about this. There was a time before the computer art that I was doing... some painting that worked for me where it was more like glazing, and it was I would go get driftwood from the beach and paint mermaids on them. There was about a year of doing that before I did the pop culture stuff, and that was really fun. It's just that nobody, like, I would have these big wooden pieces with these mermaids, and the wood would kind of come through.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was really fun.
Were you doing shows at that time?
I was doing shows. I was
when did you start doing shows?
I started doing C2E2 was the first show I did probably in 2012, I think. Okay. I think I did something called the Boston Bazaar with the Driftwood Mermaids, where it was like more of an Etsy kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I didn't even make enough to pay for the table cost when mm-hmm. I was like, I'm still not able to do this. But then C2E2 was a really great show, and I've been really lucky since then to be doing like San Diego Comic-Con, Denver, Boston. I'm going to do Dragon Con this year. Emerald City is really great too. I love that show.
So I'm assuming that you like do. How was like your first con like as like behind the table and doing that?
Overwhelming. It was really overwhelming, and it was surprising because people want you to sign the artwork. I knew that was gonna, you know, but people wanted to take pictures with me, and that was really like, even still, I just took like 3 or 4 pictures with people downstairs before I came up here, and that was really surreal. Even now, 5 years later, it's really, really surreal that somebody's like, can I take a picture with you?
Well, the good thing is, have you ever been like recognized at grocery store and stuff?
Yes, I have. Actually, there's a store in my hometown that there's at least 2 or 3 fans that work there.
Yeah.
And so that's like, if I want to go run and get milk, I should probably
look
somewhat presentable.
Yeah.
Like,
that's what's so crazy about today is like now you have to be photo ready.
Yes.
All the time.
And it's, that's,
I know what you mean though, because I think we went to Walmart in like the middle of a blizzard and I looked not so great, and I was just like going to get whatever batteries or whatever something that we needed, and then like I was like, there
someone popped out.
I was like, hi.
It's
like,
really weird. Yeah, it's really surreal. And They, I mean, it goes on the, it's not just for their camera too. Like, it's going to go on the internet. You're going to get tagged too. So that was like, all right, maybe I should start thinking about, you know, how I'm going to look
brushing my hair.
Because,
you know, when you're an artist, sometimes people don't realize that you're wearing your pajamas.
Yeah, I work in my pajamas. My hair is
necessarily
always
brush
in a ponytail. Yeah, and you expect your art to get recognized, but you don't really. It's not like if you're an actor, an actress, musician, your face is supposed to be recognizable too. For an artist, your art is recognizable, but...
Yeah.
And somebody was just asking me yesterday whether or not to use, what's the difference, like if you should use your own name or a pseudonym.
Mm-hmm.
And I belong to a Facebook group of artists for a couple years now. And that was one of the discussions we've had over and over, because I would say like 25 to 30% of them in that group have a pseudonym and the rest of us use our own names, and the pros and cons to doing that. And I'm still not sure which one's the better idea.
Yeah, that's it's a tough thing, because I've thought about it a little bit, not too much before, but like, what if you had some name that's like, it's almost like a handle, like Magic Kitty or something,
yeah.
You know, and then like, you're like, I'm known as Magic Kitty, but
yeah.
Then it's like, I feel like that would, it might work for some people, but for me, like, I kind of lose my actual individuality.
Yeah, I think for me, my fans definitely like to know, like they like to connect with the artist. They want to know about the artist. Like, I know some artists want to put their artwork out there and keep their personal life private, which I totally get.
Yeah,
but I know for me, I kind of love those little glimpses into the artist's life, and I think people like that. My friend Crystal goes by the name Bambuda, and it totally fits her, and it totally fits her art, and it's not any part of her name. I have another friend, John, who goes by Captain Ribman, and that's his persona that he's created.
Exactly, it's like the handle.
And his last name is like really long, and I would say it, but I'm really like nervous I would mispronounce it at this point. But
I'm so nervous about names like that.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Even at the beginning of the show.
And mine's pretty. Hallian is tricky. You don't like know how to pronounce that. Like Katie Cook has a great name, and that's her maiden name.
It's just like Katie Cook.
So she kept that, but I think that sometimes as other things, she goes by her married name.
Yeah.
But do you think we're almost at like a certain point with, you know, just social media and just the internet in general, where people can like just get past that name? They're like, who is she really? Who is Bambuda?
Oh yeah, you can find out who people are. Yeah, absolutely. You can dig. I mean, I really should get like a P.O. box, because I send out things from Etsy from my regular email, but then I'm like, I'm pretty sure people would be able to find me anyway at this point.
Yeah. Simple internet search.
Yeah, and then I'll have people come up and be like, I just saw that you were at so-and-so or this, because I stalk you on Instagram. I feel like such a stalker. I'm like, no, that's the public face that I'm putting out there.
Yeah.
That's okay. You're supposed to be doing that. I have a personal Facebook page that I've got locked down I actually have like 1,000 followers on there too, so I post things publicly on purpose.
And
then
privately,
quietly. But yeah, I think it's really hard to be anonymous. If you're on the internet at all, it's almost impossible to be anonymous.
Well, we're living in such a voyeuristic society too.
Yeah.
And people, like you said, they do want to know, like at least a little glimpse. And sometimes it's nice to be able to provide that to people. But I'm like solely about the art mostly, you know? And and I think that's where it's at, because that's what we do. And then, you know, I don't want to get too personal.
I know, it's tough, because I put these things out there because, like, so I have my three main are, you know, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And Facebook is mostly about the art. Instagram is about the art, and it's kind of a glimpse into like the personal life too. And Twitter has become completely politics, so that's like, it's just my outlet.
Totally
it's totally my vent right now.
Yeah.
But for Instagram, I'll post, you know, when I'm traveling, I'll post lots of pictures and things like that. And then I'll go to the grocery store after travel, and somebody will be there and be like, so how was your trip to San Diego? And I'm like, but in my head, I'm like, you did this. You posted it out there.
It's kind of like
a
local celebrity in that sense.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Yeah.
It's very surreal, especially because, like, I introduced myself to my neighbors, and I gave them my card, and then I walked away, and I'm like, oh, God, they're going to see me now. And they're going to see me outside taking out my garbage and things. And it gives me, like, it's a tiny, like, a 0.5% of what it must be like to be an actual celebrity, and I'm like, how do they deal with that? I don't know how they deal with that.
I feel like, well, they have people, like, it's like, oh, talk to my people.
Yeah.
They have like such a layer of people before you reach the actual
I just
they need
don't
to have
understand
the boundaries.
I was at my table and a couple days what was it, MegaCon, and do you guys watch Firefly?
Yes.
Gina Torres.
Yes.
So she just showed up at my table.
Great.
And I flipped out, and she was looking for a piece of my artwork, and she was there with her handler, and I was interesting to watch her handler, because you could see as everybody in the artist alley were sitting, and her handler was like, like creating this bubble around
just
her.
Let her.
Yeah, and it was because Zoe was very calm and collected.
I like how you call her
Zoe.
Name.
Oh my gosh, she's Zoe.
That's how it is now. It's really quick.
But she was very. You know, I was flipping out. People around her were all staring at her. She was able to keep her calm, but you could see her handler was helping her with that, was letting her keep her calm. Yeah. The same thing at C2E2, Will Wheaton came to my table, and he had a handler that was, like, keeping that bubble around him.
But well, many also are, like, in outfits, too, like at New York or San Diego.
They walk around
in
they'll
wear, like, a stormtrooper outfit.
I can totally see that.
Like,
that
you never know, like, who you're going to talk to if a stormtrooper comes by.
I always, like, feel like Jared Leto is going to just creep in
just
anytime.
Be,
he's always, like, just showing up.
I'm sure that I can understand that because I walked around with Hank Green at San Diego, and he got stopped every 2 seconds, like constantly.
That's crazy.
And it was nice because nobody was really recognizing me. At one point someone did, but it was weird to watch that in action because he's not, I mean, you know, levels of celebrity. He's, you know, not Gina Torres, but he's pretty high up there. And it was really interesting to watch. I said Gina Torres, right? Yeah, I said her name right.
Her actually, Zoe. She's a real person.
Yeah.
Or Cleopatra 2020, it's fine.
Yeah. which she was, like stunning and like it was distracting. She was just like
tall,
in person.
Right?
Yeah, she's super tall. Yeah. And that was great.
That's like a goddess just like coming
into the table.
Could you see her walking or were you distracted?
No, I literally, so I'm facing this way talking to people and we had a corner and I looked over and I went, ah, like that. Like I really, I look back at it and I'm like, I can't believe you did that. Well, and she's like, hi.
Also, since you're a Firefly fan, that's like really impressive too to have somebody come to your table.
Yeah.
But I noticed like the whole celebrity thing is very strange to
me. It is really strange.
Like at these Comic Cons, people are paying like $50 to stand next to someone for 2 seconds and take a picture with them.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
I was lucky enough to go. David Tennant was here, and I can't stand in a line for 3 hours. I can't be away from my table for that long.
Yeah.
But it was $170 to get an autograph, and I was very lucky. The handlers let me scoot in, hand him my art, shake his hand, and walk away.
Yeah.
Like I was able to do that. And but I was like, wow, that is so much money, and these people are waiting in line for so many hours, and he's just a human being.
Exactly.
At the same time, I probably would have if I wasn't at my art table done that to get his signature on some of my like Doctor Who art would have been really cool.
But it's people get weird around like the celebrities because even like Phil Lamar was at our table, and like all of our friends came from out of the woodwork. Like I don't know where they were, and then they're just like, hey, you know, like so it's like everyone. Everyone wants a piece of it.
It's
know?
Really weird. I'll have people come to my table and will get nervous and freaked out. I'm like, it's just me.
It's just me.
Like I'm not that cool. Talk to my 12-year-old. He will tell you I am not cool at all. But I can see it. I have freaked out. Like Katie Cook, the first time I met her, that was one of the things. Like segment here is when I was trying to make it as a freelancer, as I started following the people who I wanted
to be
careers
or,
like.
Yeah. Or you emulate.
Yeah, emulate. Like the careers, I was like, I wanted to be able to do what she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
What is she doing? So I've been following her for a while and got to meet her. Totally freaked out. Like I was like, oh my god, I'm such a fan. And she's like, oh, and she's. I said, I'm, you know, artist too. She's like, oh, I think I have one of your shirts. It's like, oh my god. And now I see
you're
her
wearing me.
Yeah, and I see her on a regular basis at all the conventions. I always say hi, and in my head, I'm like, God, I wonder if she remembers that I was such a fangirl when I met her.
She really
even
appreciates
still,
it,
I get nervous.
Like, it's good to like have that appreciation though.
Yeah.
It's just a weird thing
because
people get emotional and. We love art and creating
and
images.
We're passionate about things and it's exciting, but it is definitely weird to be on the receiving end because then I remember what I'm like when I do it to other people. Like, if I know I'm going to go talk to somebody, like when I went to go see David Tennant, I psyched myself up. I was very calm. I handed my art to him. I said, I'm a huge fan. I shook his hand. And I walked away. I was really like chill until I left and then I, you know, fell apart.
Did you plan like to say more than that beforehand?
No. I just was like, I'm just going to say this because I cut in front of a lot of people. They let me because of this cut in front of a lot of people. So I did not want to like stay there for it all. I just right through. But with Gina Torres, because she just showed up, I was a mess.
Yeah,
I was like,
great,
I look back and I was like, oh my God, I can't believe you didn't at all keep any chill,
nothing. Have you met any other Fireflies people?
I met Jewel. Okay. I did the same thing. Yeah, Jewel State.
She's really nice.
Yeah, she's super nice. I met her at at a convention, and I was able to do the same thing where they let me go and hand her some art, and that was like 2 years ago, I think.
It's really nice. Yeah. So do you, if you know that one of the celebrities are going to be there, would you do like a Jewel art if you know she's going to be there?
I don't do anything in specific, but some of them I have on hand. So like Haley Atwell was at C2E2 maybe 2 years ago, and I have a Agent Carter print. And I knew she was there, but I didn't know or realize that you would be able to maybe go and give her art or anything.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people had been buying that print and taking it to her to
get
sign.
It signed. Yeah.
So she sent her handler to come find me, and he said, Haley's been seeing this art. She really wants to meet you. She would love to buy a few copies of it. So then later on, he brought me over, and I got to give her three, and then she signed one for me, and I got to talk to her. That was pretty incredible.
It's crazy because that sounds very, like, in a way, like Hollywood.
Yeah.
Because you know how like, there's, like, some directors, like, oh, I want to work with that actress. Can you just fetch her?
Just go over, yeah.
Yeah. let's set up a meeting.
It was really surreal. It was really great, but
so
it was surreal.
What was one of the first projects you did that got you noticed by some of the bigger corporations?
I would say that my biggest... I would say there's a bunch of them. I can look across and see Stepping Stones.
Yeah.
And one of the first ones was I had been trying to get into T Fury. At that point, it was super hard to get into. It was one shirt a day, and that was it. They didn't have the gallery. They didn't have anything like that. And all focus was on that one artist for that one day. It brought you lots of attention and things like that. I think the first 15 designs I submitted didn't get in. And then an Art Nouveau Princess Leia got in.
Nice.
And that was huge. That got noticed by a lot of people. I'm trying to think. I think like Bonnie Burton, who's a big Star Wars. She wrote a Star Wars arts and crafts thing. I think she started following me at that point. It got nominated for a Geeky Award, and I flew out to like LA for like an award ceremony. I sat like at a table with Ann Wheaton and and all that. That was a big one. And then the Cinderella Doctor Who was the first one in that series, and that blew up. That kind of went everywhere. That
elevated
was kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so those were two real big ones, I think, that were. And that Princess Leia Art Nouveau one was that might be one of my favorites, but it was also one where I drew the entire thing out in pencil, took pictures of it, scanned it in to Photoshop, and I only had a laptop at that point with a touchpad, so I had to do all the lines and the colors
on a touchpad.
On my laptop for that one. And it wasn't until the Cinderella Doctor Who one that I had enough money to buy a Cintiq. Actually, I think it was, no, you know what, I won a contest for a gem design, and that I bought a Cintiq and then did the Cinderella Doctor Who one on the Cintiq. That was the first one I did, I think, yeah.
Just the ability to do it on just that touchpad.
It was just really painstaking and slow. That design took me so long to do, and it would have taken me like half the time on the Cintiq. I think that was really, I mean, I love to draw in pencil, and I did, you know, the whole thing in it, but man, it was so hard. It was really hard.
But you didn't do that.
That trusty little laptop worked so hard. Yeah, but that was good. And then getting into Star Wars Celebration was huge.
Mm-hmm.
That was a really big deal. And then I think maybe that got me noticed by someone at something. I don't actually know, but the Disney Imagineering, I don't know how they found me for a job, but that was a really great opportunity to be able to work with them doing concept work. I unfortunately can't talk about it.
Yeah. So just, you think just by being on the internet and using all your social media has helped tremendously?
Absolutely. I think that, so my sister is my business manager. She took over, she quit her job in 2012. I think it was around the time we started doing conventions, and she works for me full time now. She handles all my emails. She handles my Etsy store. She preps everything for conventions. She does all that business work, but so that I can do more time for art. But I do all my social media because I think it's important for it to be from me.
Yeah.
Personal connection.
Yeah, very personal. And social media is so important. Like it is, I every artist I meet, I'm like, that has to be how you get your work out there. Because I think I heard somewhere, someone said, do good art and put it in front of people. And that's basically what you just have to keep doing over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how you get it out there. And you never know who's gonna see it. I did some kind of parody design of Will Wheaton, of his character in The Big Bang, with Jim Parsons, and a Dr. Horrible. Like, I'd mash those two up. And Will Wheaton's son saw it and sent it to him. And then Will contacted me for a print. Like, you just never know what opportunity. Just put it out there and, like, be consistent about it.
Now, on the same lines with the social media and all that, but on the different end, like, you get to hear people's feedback about, like, your artwork and stuff like this. I know, like, Carolyn, when she did, what was it, for, like, the with the Michelle Obama?
The Affordable Care Act comics.
Yeah, she did comics for the White House, but they have, like, on the Twitter, like, you can see all the comments.
Like, you have to have a very thick skin.
Yeah. They were like, don't read the comments. Yeah. And then I was oh, let me read the comments.
Yeah.
Was there any time, like because I know being an artist, confidence is sort of a challenging sometimes.
Yeah.
Are there certain things that you've read in the past that, like, challenged you, or it's just like, what do you mean that hand is small? Like, you know. Like,
oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the first things I did was before all that was a Firefly Calvin and Hobbes mashup. And Waterston people get very upset about that because Waterston didn't want anyone to do anything with his art. So that was the first time I feel like I ever got really attacked by people. And that was tough.
They attacked you?
Oh, there were some comments that were like, how dare you? You're stealing. We're going to report this, blah, 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 blah. Like, everybody. That was like in 2010 or 11, like right before I did that Leia one I was talking about, right before I did that kind of stuff. And that was my first instance in like there were people like trolling me, like, contacting me across all social media kind of thing. And I feel like that was where I learned, look, you just have to deal with it. And I'm one of those artists, a lot of artists don't agree with this, is I'll post works in progress. Some artists are afraid either that it's going to get stolen.
Someone's going to steal it. Yeah.
I'm like, I get my stuff stolen now all the time, the finished stuff. People will just right-click it and put it on
or
T-shirts.
Yeah. Or I mean, they just, like, constantly. Have anybody, like, erase your name put it on their name
absolutely.
Or something. Or,
like, so I think that fans like to be part of the process. Like, they feel more connected to a piece of artwork if they've seen it from the sketch all the way through. And I'll ask opinions. I'll be like, what do you guys think about this color? What do you think I should do with that? And you do have to have a thick skin because you'll have people who are like, this sucks. Oh, well. And I, for the most part, I can let it roll. There was a few things that I've done recently that are political that I just felt so strongly in the past year that I had to do. My stuff, I feel, has always been pretty feminist, but this has been, like, more outwardly.
Yeah.
And when I posted, there's one or two in particular, and you can see all your insights on Facebook. It was like, gain this many followers, lose this many followers. And there were some people that were like, I've been following you for years. I feel so betrayed by this. I can't believe you shouldn't, artists shouldn't be political.
You see, artists should not be political.
Yeah.
I guess unless you're a political cartoonist.
Yeah. I was like, artists shouldn't take side. You should be fair to everybody. I'm like, no, that's not how this works. That's who I am.
Works.
Either you like me and you follow me. And I don't mean to be that, like, I'm thank you so much for your support, but this is who I am. And this is the art that I'm putting out there. And
again, that's what we were talking about, like, how much do we let ourselves in?
Yeah, it's tough, because there was one that I did where it was, ask me about your feminist agenda. And I this one really hurt, and it made me really think about stuff, because I wanted to pick five or six really strong female characters that were very feminist. And I wanted to do one from the Harry Potter, one from Star Wars, one from this, one from that. And so when I was looking at them, like, for Disney, I was looking at Merida, and I was looking at Mulan, and I was looking at Tiana, and I was looking at the time, Moana wasn't out yet. Mm-hmm. And I went with Merida because I feel like she is, like, literally fighting against the people. Like, she's just fighting for her own rights. Like, Mulan is fighting for China, and she's fighting for her dad, and she's strong. But I went with Merida. And I look at this, so I have, like, Agent Carter, I have Angelica from Hamilton, I have Leia, Princess Leia, and Wonder Woman. But there's not as many women of color in that. And then somebody called me on that. And I was like, you're right. You're absolutely right. I should have been paying attention to that. I was looking at the character.
That's, like, an honest mistake.
It was, but I should. It was tough.
It's good that they
really
called
tough.
Out in a way.
They called me out, and I actually got really defensive. And then I was like, you know what? I shouldn't have been defensive about that, because it's an honest criticism.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I brought it, and I sold out of it yesterday. But it always, like, I look at it now, and I'm like, I should have been paying attention. I should do another one. I should be paying attention to that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And it will keep you alert in the future.
Yeah, no.
I think it was, like, an intended thing.
No,
it definitely
wasn't intended. I should have. I should have been paying attention. And I'm glad somebody called me out. But at the same time, that one stung for a lot, like a while. That was, like, 2 months ago, and it sticks with me a little bit. Yeah.
You, but you never know when you're going to get called out on that stuff. And
yeah.
it's
But at the same time, I still keep putting everything out there. Like you, you just have to kind of be like, sometimes you're going to get comments that are going to stick with you, but it's more important to get your art out there and be having a conversation about it. So, but it's hard. Like I keep talking to my boyfriend about putting art out there, and it's definitely hard for artists to do that.
Yeah.
Well, another difficult thing too is the fact that you also have you're gonna have original character come out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that, and about kind of representing geek girls out there, and how. There's not as many as much stuff. It's better now, but when I was growing up, we had like Princess Leia and Wonder Woman. Those are like my two. Now we have lots of people to be able to look up to, but I feel like I want to kind of represent that a little bit.
Can you tell us about your original character? Are you allowed to?
It's something, an idea I've had for a couple of years, and it's really this year that I'm like, I really want to do this. And her name is Celara, C-E-L-A-R-A, which I'm back and forth about because it's kind of a weird name, and it's people are like, how do you even pronounce that? But it's a name from two of my favorite characters from an obscure fantasy book that I read when I was in high school by David Eddings, and it was like Paul Guerra and Synaedra, so I kind
of
put them together, and then so like right now on Steam my name is Celara, like it's been my name for a while. And there's going to be two versions of her. There's her as maybe like a high schooler or early college, where there's lots of illustrations where like there's a Star Wars one where she's putting her hair up in like a Princess Leia bun, and you can see her mirror, and she's got all sorts of Star Wars paraphernalia around it. But I also want to write a children's book where she's 5 or 6 and she loves all of her stories, and you can see her like acting out things out, but she wants her stories to come to life. Like, so she starts like shaking the book and trying to get them to come out.
That's cool.
And then she kind of eventually realizes that it's her that, by sharing them with people, drawing pictures about them, dressing up, that's how she's the one who's going to bring them out to life. Really rough, really like, that's as far as I've gotten. But right now I've got like some freelance I have to do and some commissions I have to work on. And I have to get through that stuff first. But
well, what's great is like usually like original characters, that's what the artists is like, that's, they hold that close to them. Because you can work with like the Disney, but like, but still, like, your original characters, that's yours. You know?
Yeah, and it's tough because once you make, like, her hair color, we were talking about that earlier, is it's going to be a pink or a red kind of color, but I went through every rainbow. I'm like, should I make it purple? Should I make her blonde? I want her to, like, I want people to be able to relate to her, but once I pick a single thing, that's who it is.
Yeah, and then they're like, oh, she's blonde, but I can't relate to her because
if only she had purple hair. Purple. Yeah.
So. Or you'd be like, oh, maybe it changes with the mood. I don't know.
Yeah, it's tough because once you make that, like, decision, it's... That's it.
Yeah.
That's what I've noticed with cartoony stuff recently. Like, for example, like Diary of a Wimpy Kid is basically like stick figure.
Yeah.
And so
my son loves those.
And even like a lot of the most popular webcomics are stick figure stuff.
Yeah.
And for a while I never understood it. I was just like, man, it's so rudimentary. It's like, you know, anyone can draw it. Like it, but then I finally realized, I'm like, it makes it seem like it could be anybody.
Yeah, it does. It lets anybody relate to it.
Yeah.
It's pretty clever.
It's like
actually
a mental thing that, like, at first I didn't get it because I was like,
as an artist, you're like, what are you doing? You're like phoning it in?
Yeah, like, come on, stick figures, you know? But then it does focus on the writing, which is good too.
Yeah,
but
and then, the idea.
Like, I finally got it and I was like, this totally makes sense.
Well, because I would like to do a webcomic with this character too, mm-hmm. but it takes me so long, you know, a couple, like, these people who are able to, like, quickly get their ideas out in, you know, a day. Like, if they're like, I have this idea for a comic, they do it quick, they put it up there. Whereas me, it's like, I want to add the color and the shadow and all that. And so I really want to be able to maybe have her as a form where it's like a quicker thing. But I'm always in awe of artists that are like Brian Kessinger. I don't know if you know him. He works for Disney. He does this original character called Victoria and Otto. He also has started doing a Calvin and Hobbes Star Wars mashup called Little Kylo that went like crazy viral. But he's able to just so quickly and so beautifully get something out on paper. Because, well, he works at the story department of Disney.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he worked on Moana and Big Hero 6 and all that. So he's got to be fast.
Quick draws.
It's amazing how he's able to get those ideas and those characters and the emotion out there so quickly. It's I can't do that. I wish I could.
Well, you have like a more refined style too.
I get
and there's
too
something
picky.
Really nice about that too.
Yeah, I think it's just it's I have to realize my limitations. I'm like, if you're going to do a webcomic, it's going to either, you're going to have to let go of some of that stuff, or you're going to have to, you know, put more time in it or have it not come out as much, but Yeah, it's tricky.
Yeah, so
to do everything you want to do.
Where can we find you online, since we're going to put this online?
I'm everywhere online. Yeah. KarenHellion.com. Facebook is just Karen Hellion. Instagram, I think, might be Karen Hellion Art. Twitter is, but fair warning, Twitter has gotten very, very political these days. It's just K Hellion, I think, on Twitter.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we can close the show with, if you have anything you want to say to anyone that wants to do what you do, what can you say?
Be stubborn about it. Just be I can go you draw every day, get on social media, follow artists that you love, pay attention to what they're doing, get a thick skin about, be able to listen to critiques and take out what is going to help you and ignore what isn't going to help you. But the most important thing is just be really, really stubborn. Just do it. Like, it took me 20 years, 25, how old am I? To get to where I am.
Yeah, I think a lot of people like that instant.
Yeah,
success,
there's no instant. I mean, I remember times where I was like, what am I doing? I'm never going to make it as an artist. Why do you keep picking up this pencil and keep drawing? But you can get there. If you're stubborn enough, you can definitely get there, but you have to just really want it.
Yeah.
Really want it and not have any social life sometimes. I gave up video games for a very long time. I'm finally letting myself play them again. I'm kind of addicted to Overwatch right now, but for a long time it was just work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being on here. You're pretty amazing. We're going to clap that still.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, everybody. Awesome.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Karen Hellion, Carolyn Joe Show, live at Awesome Con, 400th episode, 5th year anniversary of Awesome Con, and also the 10-year anniversary of Carolyn and I doing conventions, just so you know.
Yeah, it's been a blast. It's been fast.
You know, it's always amazing to find out, because a lot of times when we do these interviews, we don't really know a lot about these guests. We don't really know a lot about anything, really. That's actually the greatest thing about doing these podcasts and interviewing people, is actually knowing who they are at the end of it. And it was so cool to learn all about Karen Hellion at this recording. It was great. It was a great room.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to all the stuff that she's doing. That's her own creation, her own character, the geek girl character that she's creating. I'm looking forward to seeing how that turns out and getting a little glimpse of her work at the table. So I'm excited to see what she has in store of her own stuff, as well as seeing what she's producing for all those other great companies that she works for. So it's pretty amazing. She has a great career.
So it comes to that point of wondering, what are we going to release next? So I did moderate the Dark Matter panel. There's also the Pro Wrestling Today panel that could possibly come up. There's also the Other Side, the Table panel. And also, what else
I did record here? The Kickstarter.
There's a potential panel, of the Kickstarter panel,
and
too.
And I recorded it on my phone, not our usual recording device. So we'll see how that even came out. I haven't tested it yet.
But it'll be one of those.
It could potentially be that. And we also, in the vault, have two audio clips from last year's Awesome Con that we haven't released yet.
So if you want those, let us know.
What are those two? I can't remember what we have. But we do have. Oh, we do have the Heidi McDonald creating comics panel.
Yeah.
And then you did one interview.
Now I forget.
It was with the guy that was in
Jeremy London. That's right, Jeremy London.
Jeremy London. So those are in the vault somewhere. We have to dig those up.
And I'm just
we can find them.
And I'm just being a chump where I feel like maybe we should just release the Dark Matter one so I can get that out there as soon as possible. I don't know. Should we? I don't know.
I mean, I think whatever's most relevant.
Yeah.
Or maybe true. Maybe you guys can let us know. Let us know what you want to listen to next. And so also, we are on Instagram now.
That's right.
Carolyn and Joe Show.
Yeah, that's
right. Is that our handle?
At Carolyn and Joe Show, that at symbol.
And is spelled out, A-N-D.
That's right.
Yeah, so check us out online and see if you guys want to know what to listen to next. Let us know if you have any interest in any of those panels. And Joe, you have some dates coming up with Monday Mistress.
Yeah, before we wrap it up, I'd always love to plug my band that I'm in, Monday Mistress. We're playing in Fairfax. Actually, July 6th, we're playing at Jam and Java. Don't know what time it is, but, the shows always start around 8 o'clock. So just get there at the beginning. Jam and Java, Vienna, Virginia, 8 o'clock. And then on the 15th, July 15th, we're going to be playing at Epicure Cafe, our old stomping grounds. Don't know what time that show starts, but it's probably gonna start again at 8 o'clock. So just get there at the beginning.
You know, shows are at nighttime.
And also, our album is out. Monday Mistress's album is out. MondayMistress.com. Buy it. iTunes, Stitcher Radio, go Google Play, Amazon, wherever you buy music, you can buy Monday Mistress. So do that. That was a song that just opened up the show, and probably we're gonna always use that. And also, you can find my work, JoeCarbeo.com. GoStray.tumblr.com. Now I forget what else I usually plug with that. OneHyphenShots.com. All that other stuff. Just Google me. Also, Carolyn, what do you got?
Well, I have a website. It's just simply my name, CarolynBilewski.com, and you can get to all my social media links from there. But I am on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and Tumblr and all that jazz. We're all over the place, just like how Karen is. You know, you got to promote.
That's right. Also, you can find us at iTunes, Stitcher Radio, wherever you get podcasts, CarolynJoeShow.com. And that's how we do it. That is how we do it. Episode 400. It's not an end. It's a beginning. It is a beginning. And we're starting to kick it in full gear. I just want to say thank you for paying attention to us. Thank you for listening. And of course, huzzah. Huzzah, huzzah in your face. So, Carolyn, let him know.
You're bona fide.
Be excellent to each other.